ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Tammy Shipley believed someone was out to hurt her.
I thought someone was after me and I wanted to just be safe.
She's put under 24-hour surveillance.
I tried to get in contact multiple times.
I'm taking my phone call. Nobody knows where I am.
And then something strange happens.
She just drank and drank and had something like 20 litres of pure water.
Ambulance emergency.
I've got a woman unconscious.
Tammy's story. Search Background Briefing on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
Just how much agency does Australia have in shaping the impact artificial intelligence will have on our economy, our culture, and society? Can any individual country really control how AI is going to transform the way we live, work, and interact? Well, the owners and architects of the big tech platforms are openly acknowledging the stakes here. While AI clearly presents enormous opportunities, these tech CEOs themselves warn it also poses a risk to civilization and humanity. So how do governments, and corporate leaders for that matter, get the balance right? This week, Independent Senator David Pocock warned Australia is sleepwalking into this AI transformation, and he called for a smarter approach to taxing the data centre boom. But how to tax AI is just one question. The bigger concern is whether AI transformations will be imposed on Australia by big tech firms, or whether we will maintain some sovereignty or agency to control and manage this impact. So how prepared is the government? Well, a new scorecard has just been released, measuring progress on more than 100 AI capabilities. It's the first of its kind from the Tech Policy Design Institute, an independent think tank which has created a new AI agency tool. And we're going to explore what it's found about whether Australia is ready for the transformation already underway. I'm David Spears on Ngunnawal Country at Parliament House in Canberra. Welcome to Insiders on Background. Joanna Weaver is the co-founder and executive director of the Tech Policy Design Institute. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Now, you've done an enormous amount of work here that I want to get through, but before we come to some of your headline findings, how does this tool, this AI agency tool you've created, work, and what exactly are you measuring?
So it actually goes exactly to what you were just talking about there. How much agency does a country have, and can any country actually control the outcomes? And when we talk about just AI sovereignty, which it feels like lots of people are talking about at the moment, there's no precision on what is AI, so what are people actually talking about in that sentence, but also sovereignty, if we're looking at it as you either have it or you don't, you control it or you don't, there is no country in the world, including China and the US, that can control and have true AI sovereignty.
So it's not a binary question, really.
No, exactly. Right. And actually what we've done with this work is say we need to think about sovereignty as a spectrum. So rather than do we have it or not, have we got access to that particular capability? Have we got control over that capability? Have we got choice? And have we got export leverage? And it's important, right? Because if you have access, that actually is better than not having something. And if you're just looking at the binary, we're dismissing the access as something that is valuable. But we also recognize sometimes we'll need to control it ourselves. And having some combination of choice between those things gives us resilience when there's shocks and supply chain issues like we're seeing in the Middle East at the moment.
So let's get into what you've found. And perhaps we should start with the good news. Where is Australia doing well? And does the government's own national AI plan, where is it getting it right?
So I think the headline in terms of measuring the agency assessment against the government's national AI plan is that everything that the government has prioritised in the national AI plan aligns with the assessment's findings of areas that we need to lean into. So that's the good news. There's definitely more work that we need to be done, and that's where we're looking at the areas that we need to prioritise into the future.
Right.
But I'll answer the question that you actually asked, which
is the good news.
Let's start with the good news. And so that's looking at the areas where Australia has very high agency. So that's the highest level of competitive advantage that Australia has. We have 8 areas that fall into that particular category. The first one is critical minerals, which I think most people would know
about. We've got plenty of those.
We've got plenty of critical minerals. The next one is, I would group 5 of the 8 in this category. So it's our data assets. So it's things like our geospatial data, our demographic data, our medical data. We have some of the richest data assets in the world that we're not currently leveraging.
Right.
And then the the third or the eighth area, but the third bucket, is in computer vision. So Australia.
What does that mean?
So computer vision is the ability of computers to translate vision into something that computer models can read and understand. The reason Australia is leading in that area is because we use it in agriculture and mining, right? So we use it to guide where we're planting or where we're digging, to be sort of pretty blunt about it.
Right.
And we are recognised to be, along with China, to be two of the countries that are most advanced in that particular capability.
On computer vision.
Computer vision, yeah.
Okay.
And other areas where we have high agency that I think perhaps Australians wouldn't necessarily know about is things like what we call physical AI. This is robotics. So again, because of the link to the agriculture and the mining industry, we're very advanced in that space. And it's a real area of competitive advantage for us because there aren't very many other countries in the world that are advanced in that particular set of capabilities.
I think a lot of Australians probably don't appreciate that.
Yeah.
That when it comes to robotics.
Yeah.
We're right up there.
Yeah. So autonomous mining is effectively what's driving that. But it's showing how, I guess, what a traditional industry is allowing us to build the industries of the future. And to the point that you're referring to about David Pocock, how do we actually build that transformation? And that's what he's been talking about this week in terms of how do we actually transition the economy from one to the other?
All right. So they're the areas where Australia's doing well, whether it's critical minerals, that computer vision and robotics and so on. Where does Australia have low agency or not much control on your findings?
So we actually only found two areas where Australia has low agency, and that was in the manufacturing and the packaging of accelerator chips. So these are the brains of all of our computers. It's highly, highly specialised, billions and billions of dollars to build the fabrication plants to build these. And interestingly, that was an area, we're calling them strategic silences. The government's National AI Plan didn't mention that as a capability.
About the need to be able to manufacture those chips.
Exactly, or for Australia to build those chips. And actually, that probably makes sense because the way we've built this tool is to say the objective is not that Australia has leadership over all 103 capabilities. No country can do that, and having that as a policy priority makes no sense, right? It's about working out where we have competitive advantage and using that competitive advantage to ensure that we are able to fill the gaps that we have elsewhere. So it's a bit of a binary example, but for example, if we have such riches in critical minerals, why are we not using that more directly to shore up the supply of the chips in order to feed the data centres that
we're building?
In fact,
your report, this jumped out to me in your report, that we should be using that leverage more.
Exactly.
That we've got the critical minerals, but we can't make the chips, so we should ensure we get access to the chips by using our critical minerals as a bargaining chip.
Yeah, exactly.
But aren't the chips kind of critical to the whole thing? I mean, can we really just say, well, Australia can't be in the business of making those chips, but it's all going to be okay? Doesn't that leave us fairly vulnerable?
It does, except that they can't build the chips without critical minerals. And so this is what we mean about actually using the leverage. And at the moment, the only other country in the world, apart from Australia, that has the processing of these critical minerals is China, right? And so this makes Australia a very attractive country in which to have agreements to shore up the supply of the critical minerals. I think the overarching message for Australians listening to this is we have more power than many Australians realise that we do in this space. So I've referred to the areas where we have the very highest levels of advantage, but the assessment reveals that Australia, overarchingly, we have emerging maturity in AI capabilities, but we have high advantage. There aren't very many countries in the world that would put out that result. And so it's a little bit of calling on Australians to stop being so humble and to realise that we are actually a very attractive country with a lot of bargaining chips, because if we're not going to the table recognising that we're in a position of power, we might be giving away those bargaining chips before we should be.
Where else are we underdone apart from the AI chips?
Yeah. So another area that we identified as a strategic silence, where it aligns with the assessment to say this makes sense for Australia not to be leading into, is frontier or general purpose models. So these are the models that companies like Anthropic or OpenAI are building. Mm. This is hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars, if not trillions of dollars, that they are investing into building those models. We've assessed that Australia, there's not actually competitive advantage for Australia to lean into building that type of model, but there is competitive advantage for Australia to lean into building different types of models. So culturally and linguistically aligned national models, for example, so models that are recognising Australia's unique cultural identity. Mm. This is a much smaller, much more specific domain. That's really important that Australia leans into that.
Well, just on that,
area.
Because yeah, your report does warn about the risk of flattening our national culture. At worst, we risk the erosion of our national identity. Mm. So what might that look like? Are you talking about a publicly owned, government-owned AI platform that clearly embraces that Australianness, that Australian culture?
Yes to the second part, no to the first part.
Right.
So I think if we want to avoid the flattening of our culture, there's three things we need to do. The first is we need to get copyright reforms sorted, and happy to talk about that. Mm. The second is we need to lean into building models and also something called domain adaption. So building the models is saying, okay, we're going to build a model built on Australian data for Australian circumstances, and it's a sort of standalone model. Domain adaption is where we take an overseas model and we adapt it for the Australian circumstance. So think about it in terms of cars, right? We import foreign cars to Australia, but we adapt those cars. So we put the steering wheel on the other side. Mm-hmm. We have higher safety requirements mm-hmm. in Australia than most places. But then also, if you take that car and you might, I don't know, want to go four-wheel driving, right? You might jack up the wheels. You might put in air pressure things. You adapt
you
the
can
vehicle.
Tweak it. But can you do that with a ChatGPT, Claude, you know, all these? How does that look?
So not necessarily with ChatGPT and Claude, but with the underlying models that drive ChatGPT and Claude. So with Anthropic and OpenAI's models, you absolutely can. And you can put quite strong protections around it. So you can train the equivalent of ChatGPT or Claude to be responding in a way that is reflecting Australian culture rather than US culture, for example. And in some circumstances, that might be the most appropriate thing for us to do. In other circumstances, we might want it to have only been trained on Australian data, and that will change the way that it provides responses. So there are two options. And what we're really trying to do through this whole assessment is emphasize to people that we have optionality here. It's not build this giant, huge mm-hmm. model, and that's the only choice that we have. Actually, Australia, we have established maturity and high agency and domain adaption. This is something that Australia already has expertise in. We should be fostering that.
And that gets to the point you touched on about copyright. And there's been an almighty fight already about IP, intellectual property over Australian music and cinema and journalism and storytelling. What are your thoughts on how we get that right?
So we absolutely need to address this. So the government's been really clear text and data mining exemption has been ruled out. But they are also very clear, including in the National AI Plan, that the copyright review is ongoing, right? So we're kind of in this situation of limbo that has to be resolved, and quite urgently, because companies are making decisions on whether or not they can build models, including Australian models, right? Right now. And also the period and the window that we have for those models to reflect Australian culture before it's kind of sucked up and flattened is actually quite short. So I don't have the solution on copyright. This is another body of work that the team, we've finished the assessment, and maybe copyright is next. But it's
what it needs to happen quickly.
And the assessment bears that out, that it is an area that needs attention.
A couple of other things. The report also suggests there's a lack of coordination between the defence and national security community and the broader AI ecosystem. You call it a strategic missed opportunity. Mm. What's your concern there?
So we see quite a lot of activity going on in the defence sphere. So the Defence National Strategy, the 2026, and also the Defence Forward Investment Plan highlighted artificial intelligence as an area of priority. It wasn't referenced at all, apart from one passing mention, in the National AI Plan. Now, when Miles goes to ERC or to Budget Committee, he gets billions of dollars. When Ayres goes to the budget committee, he gets hundreds of millions of dollars if he's lucky, right? So the quantums of money that are being spent in these two different portfolios, defence and industry, are, you know, orders of magnitude larger in defence. I'm not saying that it will always be appropriate for defence and civilian AI development to be entwined. There are circumstances where that is not appropriate. But we have many circumstances where a defence research objective has led to really extraordinary civilian outcomes. So actually Wi-Fi invented in Australia, that was the original research goal on that was a defence goal, right? Looking at messy signals interference. So how do we deal with that? So it's an example of saying, if we can harness the huge amounts of money that are being spent by defence in AI to help build a broader ecosystem and force multiply the, you know, having people in a physical location and the flow on positive impacts that come from that, that's a real advantage, especially when the government doesn't have a lot of money to spend, right? So it's about how do we make strategic choices about what and where we're investing and making sure we're getting the most flow on benefit.
Look, finally, there is a high level of concern in the community about AI. That's undeniable. A lot of people are worried about the impact it's going to have on national security, we were just talking about, but on their jobs and on Australian culture and all of these things. Having completed this body of work, what are you most worried about? And are you more relaxed than perhaps most are about AI? How do you feel about the transformation that's underway?
I'm most worried that we're not putting enough attention into inclusive and discerning adoption of artificial intelligence. So when I say inclusive, I mean that everyone in Australia gets the benefits. And discerning is recognising that there shouldn't be an automatic assumption that AI adoption should happen. And we can't make discerning choices about whether AI is actually giving us benefits if we don't understand the choices that we're being given. And there definitely is a narrative priority throughout the government's national AI plan on inclusive AI adoption, spreading the benefits, etc. But there aren't any actual initiatives backing that up. And that's really important because if we don't get inclusive AI adoption, all we're going to do is entrench existing disadvantage and probably expand it. And so I think we really need to focus on that part of it.
That's really interesting. What might that look like, ensuring that there is more equal access and understanding of AI, regardless of, as you say in the report, location and background, making sure that all Australians are on board.
Absolutely. And it's things, some of that is education programs, some of it is skills. But also it's like, how do we leverage, if we're having data centres that are being built in the regions, how do we make sure that those data centres are also bringing high-speed internet to the regions that some areas are still, we still are digitally disconnected. But also how do we ensure and place the obligation on those data centres to be actually upskilling the populations on how to use artificial intelligence? These are norms that we can be embedding right now in the strategic decisions that we're making as part of the approvals processes, for example.
Fascinating work. And I know this, well, just tell us, where does it go from here, this work that you've done and what comes next?
Yeah, so it's going live on Monday. So people will be able to find it if you want to on our website. And then from here, we're actually digitizing the tool. So we're going to make it into something that people can actually interact with so that you can see if we change particular settings, how that changes Australia's agency power and control. And we hope and certainly have had really positive feedback to date that it will actually help to feed into the decision making that's being made.
Joanna Weaver, thank you very much for talking us through the work that you've done. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
And we'll be fascinated to see, as we often are with AI, how this progresses. And hope you can join us Sunday for Insiders on ABC TV. We'll be back in the podcast feed next week, PK, on Monday. And then we'll return with Insiders on Background at the end of the week. Bye for now.
You're making us all feel very excited about being here.